We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ryan and I still have functioning UCLs, so we're here to give you our weekly fab show. We'll give you the players we're picking up right after this. Welcome, everybody, to the Saturday Fab edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Eric Holtzman, joined by Ryan Bowyer. And as promised, both of us have functioning elbows. It's a rare commodity in the baseball world these days, but you're still working. I checked in before the show. No damage in the last 5 minutes?
Not in the last 5 minutes, no. So...
yeah, the baseball world, unfortunately, had to deal with plenty of elbow-related pitcher news this morning. We woke up to the news that Shane Bieber needs Tommy John surgery. A weird one because there wasn't really any indication. This wasn't one of those where he left in his last start a little bit early. His velocity was actually a little bit down, about half a tick, but it was up in his first start, so that wasn't necessarily... particularly worrisome sign, but here we go. No Shane Bieber after he added velocity. Couldn't even make it to his third start of the season. Tough one to see.
Yeah, that was kind of came out of nowhere, as you mentioned. We saw that he went to driveline over the offseason, added some velocity. Maybe that's just not the thing to do. I know that's what... teams, I feel like the toothpaste is out of the tube at this point. It's hard to get teams to kind of throttle back in that regard, because that's kind of max effort, max spin is really in vogue right now. But, and got to imagine that that's a major reason why we're seeing all these IL stunts, and they just keep going up every year, especially for pitchers. So, yeah, bummer for Bieber going into his walk year, and he had looked terrific his first two starts. One of them was against the A's, so a little grain of salt there. But as you mentioned, the velocity was up in spring training, but it was kind of back a little bit in the first couple of starts, not to the level where, oh, gosh, this guy might have a bad elbow. But – bummer for Bieber. Bummer for the Guardians. I guess Xavion Curry. Maybe he's on his way back from the injured list. I think just an illness is what he was dealing with. Ben Lively is also coming back from the injured list. I believe he's made a rehab start as well. So they technically could go either route there. But yeah, Shane Bieber probably out until about, what, mid-season 2025 now.
Yeah, also means, I guess, Carlos Carrasco is safer at the back of this Guardians rotation, but I'm not sure that matters too much for fantasy purposes. If it does, that would be cool, but I wouldn't be counting on it. And yeah, just such a tough one for Bieber, because of course he wants to add velocity and get back to his peak. His strikeout rate was half of what it was in 2020 last year. He was not the same guy he used to be, and we knew why. It's because he couldn't throw as hard. So, of course, he's going to go try to get that back. heading into his walk year, trying to prove that he's the guy he always was. It's just so tough. Those are always his incentives, even if players and teams know that adding velocity risks injury. Are you going to, you know, as a player or as a team, say, you know what? I'm not going to throw as hard as I can. I'm going to have a higher ERA than I could otherwise. I'm good. 450, that's totally fine. I'm not going to try to add anything to my game, right? What player is ever going to do that? And what team's going to continue employing a player who's not going to do that? So it's just such a tough incentive structure, and I don't know our way out of it.
So maybe the Cardinals secretly have figured it out. They just rostered all old pitchers who don't throw hard anymore. Maybe they've cornered the market on that and figured out a market inefficiency there. But no, I just don't know how. Maybe it's going to be a gradual change, kind of a little back to more so how it used to be, but I don't know how that's going to work. And think about too, like how often we've seen constantly Shane Bieber's name up in trade rumors, and the Guardians ultimately resisted trading him, and now they're going to get nothing for him. Maybe they'll wind up signing him to an incentive laden deal with maybe a team option. So yeah, but it's just a bummer all the way around.
Bummer there. And it may not even be the most relevant pitcher injury of the day. That is how brutal today is, because Spencer Strider didn't even get top billing on today's podcast because we don't yet know for sure what he needs. But if we hear in a week or so that he needs Tommy John surgery, I don't think anybody would be surprised. He did experience some discomfort during his start, was pulled a little bit early, and had an MRI, which showed damage to his UCL. We're not yet at the place where Tommy John surgery is being actively discussed, but damage to a UCL tends to only head in one direction. I would imagine we're looking at the best case here of we're going to try to rest and rehab and see where we're at in 2 months. And I don't think anybody is super confident in those situations.
Right. And he has already had one Tommy John surgery. Maybe they could get away with an internal brace procedure that would shorten the window a little bit. But I mean, a second Tommy John surgery in April, that could potentially knock him out of basically all of next year as well, I would think. That's just, he's the people who are just never going to use a high pick on a pitcher like as high as Spencer Strider was going. I guess they might feel somewhat vindicated between that and Garrett Cole if you had an earlier draft. But I would hate to be the guy who kind of basked in the glory of such a just bummer of an injury such as this, because Spencer Strider is just so fun to watch, so great for baseball, great for the fantasy game. And, you know, like you said, probably headed towards a second Tommy John surgery. And what are we looking at? Maybe the Braves at least do have some interesting options to fill in. Potentially looks like Bryce Elder's probably going to be the first guy up, I would assume. I'll also have A.J. Smith-Sharver there, and guys like Hurston Waldrop are just a call away at AAA Gwinnett. So the Braves, we also know, are very aggressive at times with their young players. So it would not shock me to see a guy like Hurston Waldrop up sooner rather than later, especially given, you know, the Braves are obviously going for the World Series this year. But yeah, Bryce Elder likely the fill-in now. And Bryce Elder, as solid of a pitcher as he is, and I'll actually be mentioning him a little later in our Fab section, he is definitely not Spencer Strider.
Yeah, he is maybe closer to Spencer Strider than you and I are, but not all that much closer. Spencer Strider is in a tier by himself. And I definitely want to avoid all gloating about injury, like you mentioned. But I do think we should talk briefly about that strategic point. We see people more and more talking about I got to be conservative in the first round. I can't have my first round pick get injured. You see that get talked about when people are completely out on Aaron Judge or completely out on Yordan Alvarez. Yeah. There was even this spring, it was, you know, Corbin Carroll. No new news about his shoulder, but his shoulder looked scary last year. So there were plenty of people who were just completely out in the first round. Should we just apply that to every single pitcher and say, if I am prioritizing safety in the first round, I do not take a pitcher, no matter the circumstances? Because Strider didn't really have particularly any reasons to believe that this was the year he'd get hurt. I mean, he throws really hard, sure, so he could get hurt at any time. But compared to other pitchers, I wouldn't have considered Strider a particularly elevated injury risk.
No, me either. And that's why I have a hard time, you know, just having like a blanket rule like that. I mean, I think you could have made a very, very strong case that Spencer Strider could have been taken second overall. And I don't even think that necessarily, like, you can't say that that was the wrong thing. It's going to wind up being the very wrong thing. Right. If you're going to get just a couple starts out of him. But if you're just judging yourself on the process, I think, you know, Spencer Strider, if he stays healthy all season, pretty decent chance he's the top overall player, not only the top pitcher. So I think it was perfectly justifiable. And like you mentioned, there was no real red flag other than just he throws really hard. And those guys tend to get injured more often than the guys that don't throw as hard. But yeah, I can't really justify. I don't think I understand it. I think the people who did use a pick on Spencer Strider this year, there's probably no way they're going to be taking a pitcher in the first round next year. That's just how these things work. But I would have a tough time just having like a blanket strategy to not use that risk. I think we just have to, kind of depends on the year, depends on the player.
Yeah, fair enough. Just something I've been thinking about as the injuries pick up. Also been thinking about the pitch clock as the injuries pick up.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We certainly can't say for sure that the pitch clock is causing these injuries. We know that there are plenty of other causes. You know, if Strider easily could have had the same injury 2 years ago, same with Dripper, and maybe we're just living in the moment. But what disappoints me is that the league isn't even really publicly acknowledging that, you know, hey, there was some thought that the pitch clock might lead to injuries, and hey, there are some injuries. We're looking into it. I just want to see that the league is looking into it and not just treating the pitch clock as an absolute win. And I'm not seeing that. So I don't know. I don't know if we can draw any conclusions, but I just want to see it talked about at the highest levels.
Yeah, I guess it probably is going to take multiple years for any kind of real study to be able to have accuracy on that. I don't know. And probably doesn't help that they're shortening the time with the, what is it? How many seconds fewer with runners on base?
Yeah. They took two off.
Two off. That's right. So yeah, I don't know.
A bummer of a day. Oh, we got to continue with a bummer too, because there's a couple more injuries, no more pitcher injuries, but Luis Robert, heading to the injured list already 1 week into the season with a hip flexor injury. And this is particularly worrisome because he's had a hip flexor injury in the past, and I think it cost him 3 whole months. So yeah. I don't think Robert's a guy we are optimistic about when it comes to injuries. I don't see a timeline for him yet, but I'd take the over on whatever it is we have written down.
Yeah, and he did not have surgery that first time around. So this could just be a case of, and if I recall from, I kind of remember the highlight, not really a highlight, low light, I guess, when he hurt the hip a couple of years ago, and he looked very similar last night when he got hurt. And if it's just a aggravation of that injury from a couple of years ago, I mean, that's like you mentioned, multiple months, potentially he could be on the shelf. Last year, he finally stayed healthy and we saw the potential there. But, you know, you had to weigh the injury risk, I think, coming into the season with him. You're not certainly weren't expecting another hip injury this early on in the season, but that was, you knew you were going to, it's a little bit of a roll of the dice injury risk wise with Luis Robert, given his history, but we don't know much yet. As you said, hopefully this is a, maybe you can get a PRP injection or something and ramp things back up before long. That's a best case scenario, but yeah, not terribly optimistic on his long-term prognosis or the replacements potentially for the White Sox.
What are we even looking at there?
Kevin Pillar maybe is going to get more at bats. They just purchased Robbie Grossman's contract. Sure. It's no pun intended. It's gross, man.
Yeah. Nice. Well done. High level humor there. Yeah, not looking good for Luis Robert. And with that team, you know, the White Sox are probably the last team you'd want to have an injured player on, because they're going to slow play it. They've got nothing to play for basically already.
Yep.
So if it's at all close and they give him two extra weeks to recover, they're going to do that. One more injury to talk about here in our introduction/injury section. Trevor Story exited in pain with a shoulder injury, and really in quite a lot of pain. He was not feeling good after his diving catch attempt. Not sure yet what the actual injury is and when exactly he'll be back, but at least judging by his face, not soon.
Yeah, I assume we're probably going to hear news going to drop any minute now, maybe while we're recording. But yeah, it certainly looked terrible. It reminded me of kind of the stuff we saw from Fernando Tatis with the shoulder subluxation, fancy word of it's partially separated, I believe.
Right.
And that's an injury that, and same thing that Corbin Carroll dealt with as well, I believe. And, that's an injury that, like Carroll has done, it's the potential, and Tatis did for a while. It's something you can play through, but it's also at risk of kind of popping out again at any time. And a lot of the time, like Tatis eventually did, you can wind up needing surgery for that. As you mentioned, we don't know the severity yet. He hasn't even been placed on the injured list. Even in a best case scenario, I got to assume he's going to go on the IL. But he was definitely in a ton of pain, just rolling around, just writhing in pain. It certainly did not look good for a guy who has dealt with his fair share of injuries already.
Yeah. And as far as replacements go, Pablo Reyes next up on the depth chart. Sidon Rafaela could move back into the infield. They could move Vaughn Grissom back over to shortstop when he's healthy. I'm not sure. We'll be talking about Vaughn Grissom in a minute, but he's probably going to be playing second. So those other options, anything there? Rafaela's already also playing.
Yeah. I mean, David Hamilton is got a lot of stolen base potential. He can really run. I mean, he stole like 50-something bases in the minors last year, 70 the year before that. I don't know that they would – I think I'm with you that they would probably – give Reyes the first shot, and he's completely uninteresting to me for fantasy purposes. Putting Grissom at shortstop and Manuel Valdez, his bat is somewhat interesting. So that could potentially give him more of a leash on a regular job, but Grissom at shortstop and Valdez at second would, I think, undoubtedly be the worst defensive middle infield combo in baseball. So I don't know that the Red Sox would want to go down that road. I think it's more likely they'll use Reyes for now, maybe give David Hamilton a look. But yeah, it's hopefully the Story injury doesn't wind up being long-term, but again, it did not look great.
Yeah, and he has had his fair share of injuries recently as well. We're going to get to our mixed league fab targets, our first set of guys. We got 10 players who are available in the majority of shallower leagues on sites like Yahoo and ESPN. We will share our players on that in just a minute after I tell you about Rival Fantasy. It's a new baseball season, and that means it's time for MLB DFS on Rival Fantasy. If you want to make every day draft day, try out Rival Fantasy's daily and weekly MLB Best Ball. Draft a squad for a single day slate or an entire week of games. Play the matchups and home road splits without worrying about waiver pickups or daily roster management. Drafting isn't your thing? Rival Fantasy has Fantasy Bingo, a salary cap free DFS game. Fill out your squad and try to complete achievements on your bingo card. Get 5 in a row or 4 in a corner to win. Then there's challenges. Pick which player will score more fantasy points in head-to-head matchups. DFS has never been easier. Go to joinrival.com/rotowire or use code ROTOWIRE at signup to get a $200 deposit match plus $25 in free entries. If you're ready to play fantasy sports made for sports fans, it's time to play on Rival Fantasy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And we're back here with our fab recommendations for the week. We're going to be starting with players who you probably won't be able to get in a deeper mixed league, but who are still out there in at least half, and in many cases, close to 90% of your shallower leagues on sites like Yahoo and ESPN. We'll start with the pitchers first. Ryan, who you got?
Ronel Blanco. I think we have to go with him first, right? Just as everyone predicted, our first no-hitter of 2024 came from Ronel Blanco. Against the Blue Jays, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks. He had 20 whiffs on the night. That's a nice number. Guy who had a very untraditional route to Major League Baseball. He signed out of the Dominican Republic at 22, which is like 6 years later than most guys sign. He's now 30 years old. He's got a couple seasons under his belt in the majors, more like 1.5, but certainly not a ton of experience for a 30-year-old. I think he is somewhat interesting, though, as much as he seemed to come out of nowhere. I mean, last year he kind of split time between the rotation and the bullpen and had a 15.7% swinging strike rate in those two roles. So that's an elite number. Also interesting to me that in that no-hitter against the Blue Jays, his changeup was his most used pitch. And that pitch, he used it about 10% of the time last year. So he could be working on a new pitch mix that could elevate his potential as well. If he control, he doesn't throw many strikes. That's an issue. The track record in the minors while he has missed bats is up and down, I would say. But I think the stuff is pretty good. He's obviously going to have a lot of offensive backing on the Astros. So I think Ronel Blanco isn't necessarily a one-hit or no-hit wonder. Who's your first guy, Eric?
Oh, well, first, do you have a percentage recommendation for him? How much would you bet on or bid on Blanco this week in a shallower league, I think, is where we're going here.
Percentage, I would say 12, maybe.
Yeah, sounds reasonable enough, especially with that changeup. He's a different guy than he used to be. Jared Jones is my top guy. Now, he will have gone off the board in all your deeper leagues, but I think people in shallower leagues waited a start or two to see, is this just some buzzy deep league sleeper, or is he a all formats type player? And after two starts, I'm pretty confident that Jared Jones is an all formats type player. I would be going out to get him in shallower leagues as well. A 35% strikeout rate against a 4% walk rate through his first two outings. About as good as you can ask for. That's one at Miami and then also home against Baltimore. 10 strikeouts and then 7 strikeouts in those two outings. He was described as a budget Spencer Strider one or two places, which sounds different today after Spencer Strider's injury. And hey, for all we know, I've just cursed Jared Jones for next week. But the guy throws really hard and it's got a repertoire led by a fastball and a slider, and it's working. Crucially, he's not walking too many guys. He walked too many guys in the minors, but again, a 4% walk rate through two starts. That's really promising. And it's that really is the thing which makes me think he is a mixed league viable pitcher as well in some of those 10 and 12 league formats. I think you can go over 10% with him too. I'd go 10 to 12.
Yep. I would take the over on that with him. He'd be the, if he's still available in your league, I think he's the most interesting of all the guys we're going to talk about in this section. One guy who has been on the fantasy radar for a little while now and has been interesting at times, not as interesting at other times, Sean Manaea of the Mets. I do think he's pretty interesting again. We saw in his first start, 8 strikeouts, just 1 hit allowed, and 6 shutout innings against a Tigers team that's playing very well out of the gate. Took a no-hitter into the 5th inning in that outing. Go back to August of last season. Since then, he has a 2.87 ERA. Velocity bump last year didn't totally stick in the first start, but still up from his career numbers. He also used a cutter in that first start, a pitch that he has never really used before. So I'm interested to see how that is going to work out for him as far as his repertoire goes. But Sean Manaea, I think, given the inconsistency he's had during his career, probably might still be available in a good number of leagues. And I think he can definitely be mixed league viable. I would go 7-8% for him.
Yeah, not bad. I don't think I'd go much more just because I don't think he's going to suddenly be super exciting, but I think he's going to be totally fine, and that might be where you have to go for totally fine. Moving on to the first reliever, let's go with James McArthur of the Royals, who got a save yesterday, and the percentage you'll have to bid on him to win him will go way up if he gets another save tonight or tomorrow before the Fab run actually happens. But McArthur didn't get a clean ninth inning. What actually happened was Will Smith got a clean ninth inning and got into a jam. He got a strikeout, then a double, and then a walk. And they only gave him 3 batters. The Royals didn't let him get out of the frame. They turned to James McArthur, who got a ground out double play and got his 2-out save while only facing 1 batter. The reason I'm putting McArthur here is as much about Will Smith as anything. Will Smith so far has a 14.6% strikeout rate. So less than a 15% strikeout rate. My bad. I'm looking at the wrong Will Smith. No wonder my numbers were in the wrong order. I was like, why am I seeing his walk rate before his strikeout rate? I know they've been bad. Well, guess what? It was a 15% strikeout rate for the right Will Smith as well. That makes sense. And there the walk rate for him much higher, 25%. That was the point I was trying to make, and it's easier to make when you look at the correct set of stats. So Will Smith walking far more batters than he struck out thus far, already being pulled from save chances, even though he did record one already. James McArthur was seen as the most likely next man up, though if you're in a deeper league, maybe throw $1 or $0 at a Nick Anderson or a John Schreiber. Whenever these situations are up in the air, the 3rd and 4th guys are also worth looking at. McArthur, through his career, a 5.33 ERA in 27 innings, but the peripherals are much better. His Sierra down at 2.81 because he doesn't walk anybody. A 2% walk rate for his career so far. So I think he's the next man up in Kansas City. And right now, I think you might only have to go 5 or 6 to get him. If he gets a couple more saves, though, you're going to have to go 16 or something crazy.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right, the number there. Wouldn't want to be totally investing a bunch in that bullpen at this point, though, as you mentioned, because there's still other options. And also Matt Quatrero is of the Tampa Bay ilk, where he doesn't necessarily want to settle on one closer. So not a super settled bullpen, but James MacArthur, definitely the most interesting guy there, I think. Bryce Terang, running wild for the Brewers so far. League-leading 6 stolen bases, tied with Jaron Duran. He had 26 stolen bases last season. He's reached base 8 times in his first 6 games. It's not all perfect with Bryce Terang. He didn't hit all that well last year in his rookie season. He does sit most often against lefties, bats in the lower third of the lineup. But we are talking about former top prospect. The speed is definitely legitimate. He's going to play every day against righties. The power isn't great, but Miller Park or American Family Field, whatever they're calling it these days, could boost that up just a little bit. Maybe he can give you double digits and home runs. And I think he's definitely going to be a stolen base asset. When he wasn't getting on base at a great clip last year, still stole 26 bases, as I mentioned. If he gets that up over 30, he's a guy who should be basically universally rostered, I think. So I would be willing to probably go in the high single digits, maybe as much as 10 for him percent.
A lot of speed there for Terang, but questions about the rest of his game. But with his youth, he could easily be answering those questions and could be quite an exciting option this year. Speak of speed, Jose Caballero has 4 steals for Tampa as their shortstop. He's also played in every single game so far, and he's hitting .304 for good measure, but I don't care too much about a BABIP inflated batting line at this point. The main things I care about are you don't really know how much a player is going to play when he goes to Tampa Bay. So to see someone play every day through the first 7 games, that's very encouraging. And the speed is real. Last year in 280 plate appearances with Seattle, Caballero stole 26 bases. So we're talking over 50, pushing 60 if he got a full 600 plate appearances, which, hey, he might even do that. I'm not sure what else Caballero is going to do. He was not a top prospect who was expected to have a particularly good bat. He's much more of a utility man who might be a little bit more than that. But hey, if a player with that profile is going to threaten 50 steals if he gets the playing time to do it, and it looks like he might get the playing time to do it, I want in on him now. Easily would go, I think, pretty similar to Terang, 6 to 8 maybe on Caballero.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The Rays basically signaled over and over again that Caballero was going to be an everyday guy. I think because he wasn't really much of a prospect, people had trouble believing it. But lo and behold, he has been an everyday guy, as it turns out. And I do think the stolen bases are for real. I agree. Going back a little bit to another closer, Michael Kopech. Speaking of closers with, you mentioned Will Smith, the high walk rate. Michael Kopech's probably not going to throw enough strikes. Not going to throw enough strikes as many as you'd like, for sure, as his move back to the bullpen. But he's pumping 100 miles an hour consistently. I think that this is the right role for him. We don't know for sure that he's the no questions asked closer. It's a very unsettled bullpen. It's a very not good team. But I think he's clearly the best option there, and it's a role that suits him well. Wouldn't go crazy with the bidding, but I think high single digits is perfectly fine, 8 or 9.
Yeah, I think that's fine. We're running out of guys who look like they will probably be closers and who are still out there. And even if there's no guarantee that the White Sox even have a closer, he's the closest we're going to get. So I think you got to go for him if you need saves. My next hitter here, Alex Kirilloff, is going to be owned in your deep leagues, but I was surprised at how many shallower leagues Kirilloff is still out there in, close to 90% on some of these sites. Kirilloff, I guess he doesn't play against lefties, so maybe that's part of the reason. And in shallower leagues, that will hurt him. But Kirilloff's he's a legitimate talent. The question with Alex Kirilloff has always been, can he stay on the field? And nothing he's done through 1 week has told me that he can stay on the field. But he's a good enough player where you want him in your lineup until he gets hurt, and then you move on and get somebody else. So in these shallower leagues, if I had a need at first base or corner or outfield, I'm getting Kirilloff. He's batting second against every righty. I'll take a few days off against lefties. I think he can hit for decent power and average. I don't think he will still be healthy come August, but I'll figure that out in August. I want Alex Kirilloff on my team now. I don't know if he pops that much that you need to bid a ton on him, but he should be on someone's team in every single, even 10 and 12 team league, I think. So I'd go at least 3 to 5.
Yeah, for sure. I've been a big Alex Kirilloff fan the last couple of years. And as you mentioned, because of the injuries, I think he's could still be off radars. It could be a sneaky little buy. And if he does happen to play 140 games, I think he could pick up some big numbers. Charlie Blackmon, kind of running it back to one of the grizzled veterans of the Colorado Rockies, batting leadoff for them, off to a 357, 379, 536 start, stole a base in, among those first seven games. 2023 missed a lot of time with a broken hand, but he was pretty productive when healthy, OPS over 800. He's always been a great average asset. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't continue. If he continues to bat leadoff and manage to stay healthy, he's probably going to score a good number of runs. I don't know that we can necessarily count on much power at all or speed at this point in his career, but maybe you got to pick your spots with him. But his games at Coors have been very limited so far. They started out on the road and he's off to a nice start. So I think Charlie Blackmon can still be a useful fifth fantasy outfielder, and you can probably still get him pretty cheaply. I would go 2% and be pretty happy about getting him at that rate.
Yeah, I think he still belongs in shallower leagues as well. As does my final hitter here, Vaughn Grissom. Now, he technically is not going to be available in every league because he is on the injured list still, but he's about to begin a rehab assignment. And since it looks like Trevor Story pretty likely to miss some time, there'll be even more at-bats available in the middle infield in Boston, although Grissom probably had as many at-bats as he's able to earn available to him already. I think he's worth a decent bid, 5% to 7%. Maybe you might be able to sneak him in for cheaper this week because he's not on the doorstep of returning. He could be back in roughly a week or so, perhaps, maybe a couple if he needs a longer rehab assignment. But he should play a ton for a good Red Sox or good enough Red Sox lineup in a great hitting park. And he makes a ton of contact. I'm not sure if he's going to do a ton of other things. He's more a guy who would get you 10 to 15 homers and steals than threaten 20 of each of them. But you combine that with a very solid batting average and a lot of playing time, I want Grissom, and I'd go even 5 to 7% or so.
Yeah, I could make an argument. You could even go a little higher than that, I think. As you mentioned, makes a ton of contact. I think he's a good batting average bet. And Fenway Park can play up that right-handed power a little bit. I think he could still easily get to double-digit home runs, even with this little missed time and a little bit of speed and power along with the batting average potential. I think he's definitely interesting.
All right, we're going to move on to some players for deeper leagues after this message from Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team, live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress towards your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great seats for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. Back here with Ryan Boyer on the Saturday Fab edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We have discussed some of the names that you'll want to grab in your shallower leagues. Now we're moving on to some deeper league options, starting with the pitchers. Who's your first pitcher on the list here, Ryan?
I got Javier Assad of the Cubs. Six shutout innings in his first start of the season. career ERA now for Javier Assad, 2.94. It's a 2.80 ERA as a starting pitcher. If you go back since the All-Star break of last year, a 2.29 ERA, 72 to 25, strikeout to walk rate over 78 in two-thirds innings. He's probably not going to get you a ton of strikeouts, although those numbers I mentioned since the All-Star break last year, I mean, that's almost a strikeout per inning. I don't necessarily think you can count on that. But he gets a lot of ground balls. He induces a lot of weak contact. You watch Javier Assad pitch, and you kind of wonder how it happens, but he's pretty crafty and decent minor league track record. I think he could be a useful deep league play. Wouldn't go crazy with a bid in a deep league, but if he's still available, a few percentage points I think is fine.
Yeah, 2 to 3 seems fine. Looks like he'll have a two-start week next week at San Diego, at Seattle. Not bad. Not exciting, but not bad. And he'll get Miami probably the week after that. So usable, which is all you need for these deep league guys. Definitely recommend checking out the starters grid at rotowire.com if you're picking up a fringy starting pitcher, because you want to know that you can actually use them and not just look at their stats while they're sitting on your bench. I will give you my first pitcher is another Cub, Ben Brown, whereas Javier Assad has been in the rotation since the start of the year and has a safer rotation spot with Justin Steele on the shelf for this hamstring injury. Ben Brown opened the year in the minors, but was the guy called up to take Steele's spot. And now he actually was called up last week. So in some leagues, he was claimed, probably by me, even though he had a very first poor relief start. Actually, he was called up on Sunday and was blown up for like 5 runs in one inning of relief or something like that. So that kept a lot of people off of him. And he wasn't officially added to the Cubs rotation, but he basically was. He was the long man after an opener. And I would be unsurprised if he remains that guy for at least a few more outings until he either gets a proper rotation spot or until Steele gets back. I wouldn't be throwing more than 1% or so on Ben Brown, but I want him on here because he's a very interesting prospect, somebody who has excellent stuff, questionable command, but if he figures it out, suddenly that excellent stuff is paired with decent enough command and you have a really good starter. So I want to take a chance on him. I'm not doing so with a ton of optimism, but he's here, he's exciting, and it might work out. So I'm throwing 1 or 2%.
Yeah, certainly more upside as compared to Javier Assad, a fellow Cubs pitcher. And I think I mentioned last week when we talked a little about Ben Brown that always keep in mind the ABS system at AAA last year that elevated a lot of walk rates. So not necessarily going to be that bad at the major league level. I know a lot of people automatically assume, well, if he walked this number at AAA, it's probably going to be even worse in the majors. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, and the stuff definitely plays. So I'm fine with throwing a couple bucks on him and seeing if it works out. Another guy whose stuff has played, Alec Marsh, Kansas City Royals, 7 innings, just 1 run, only 2 hits and 1 walk, 5 strikeouts at Baltimore. Tough first matchup, and he passed that test with flying colors. 90 strikeouts in 81 and 1/3 innings last year in the majors. Go back to the minors, he had 311 strikeouts and 245 and a third innings. Last year, 3 pitches with a 30-plus percent whiff rate. It was 45% on the sweeper. So he can miss some bats. He's got some decent stuff. Major control issues. Even more so than Ben Brown. And you look at the minor league track record, it's really not very good. I think his career minor league ERA is like well into the fives. But some of these guys who can miss bats, maybe something clicks. I don't think he's worth more than a couple bucks, same as Ben Brown, but he's got decent stuff. As I mentioned, he can miss some bats, so throw a couple bucks at him and maybe just play him in more favorable matchups for the time being, and perhaps you can catch a little lightning in the bottle.
Yeah, another cheap option from me is Spencer Turnbull, a different type of cheap option here. The last two were young guys who, hey, it might work out this year, so let's get him on our roster now just in case it does. Spencer Turnbull, much more of a short-term guy. He, for now, is the Phillies' fifth starter until Taijuan Walker comes back from injury, which is not supposed to keep him out for too long. He was just dealing with something that, you know, delayed his start. He could show up even before the end of April, I think, or early May. But that should give Turnbull a couple more weeks in the rotation. And as long as he's fine, he'll do fine on your team. And he could even stick around after that. No guarantee that four other starting pitchers remain healthy for the remainder of this month. Unfortunately, that's the theme of the day. So you might be getting Spencer Turnbull for longer than that. I think you're mostly just getting him for the next few weeks. But I think Spencer Turnbull is a completely adequate back-end starter on a pretty good team whose next few weeks look like this. He's got a two-starter next week at the Cardinals and home against the Pirates. So I think you're fine with that most places, as long as you think Spencer Turnbull is at least a competent back-end starter. And then the following week, he lines up to face the White Sox. So I really want Spencer Turnbull in both of those in a deeper league. I don't think he's exciting, but I think he's still competent enough to be a fifth starter on a bad team or a sixth starter on a good one. And I think that has enough fantasy value.
Yeah, this guy, unfortunately or fortunately, I guess, depending on how you want to look at it, unlike Turnbull, is probably going to be a long-term chance in the rotation. We mentioned him earlier, Bryce Elder of the Atlanta Braves, almost surely going to be the guy to step in for Strider, at least initially. Had a 2.97 ERA in the first half last season in the Braves rotation. He went 6 1/3 shutout innings with 7 strikeouts in his first AAA start this year. Now we got to talk about what he did in the second half last year. That was not as good. 5.11 second half ERA. And if you look at the underlying numbers, they kind of pointed to maybe not that much of a downgrade in performance down the stretch, but we saw some warning signs. Limited strikeouts. He's not going to miss a ton of bats, but ground ball pitcher, he's going to get a ton of offensive support. I think as far as just a ratio getter, maybe he's going to pick up some wins. I think he went 12-4 last year. He could easily pick up a dozen wins the rest of the season. He's not going to be very exciting, but there are things working in Bryce Elder's favor, and I think he's a perfectly solid deep league option.
Yeah, I think there are reasons he didn't win that job out of camp, and I don't think he's going to be exciting, but I agree on the perfectly solid. We did have a question earlier about A.J. Smith's Schauber. As of right now, it hasn't officially been Bryce Elder who got the job ahead of Smith Schauber, but we assume it probably will be, especially because Elder had a good first start in the minors and Smith Schauber got lit up. Would you be trying to stash Smith Schauber now, though, in leagues where you had enough bench space that it was tolerable to stash somebody?
I'm fine with it. I would actually be more interested in stashing Hurston Waldrop if you have the bench space. And he's down the line more, but I think the upside is a lot higher. I would be more interested in a Waldrop stash in a deeper league.
Yeah, I could see that. I would consider either of them if the situation is right. I think they're both talented pitchers, but we just don't know if they're going to get that first chance or not yet. Let's go to one budget reliever, Chad Green. Did get the save for Toronto. It's only a temporary closer job with Jordan Romano working his way back from an elbow injury. He's already throwing live batting practice, so there may only be a week or two left of saves in Toronto. But I did want to mention that it was Chad Green, not Jimmy Garcia, who got the save yesterday. And also remind people that Chad Green, do you remember we used to just draft him as a middle reliever? There were one or two guys every year where they threw like 75 to 80 innings of relief instead of 60, and they had elite strikeout rates and ratios. That was Chad Green. And so yep. I don't hate getting him for a buck and maybe even expecting to keep him around for a bit after Romano comes back. I think Chad Green might be a solid enough reliever that he's, you know, somebody you cut if there's a good starter out there, but you don't mind having him on your team. So I would be happy throwing a buck at Green, even though I don't think he's going to remain the closer for very long.
Yeah, I'm fine with that too. And keep in mind, while Romano and Eric Swanson are both due back soon, they're both coming back from arm issues. All indications are that they're both minor, but it wouldn't be, as we've seen, unfortunately, in the last 24 hours, arm issues can get a lot worse and can get worse in a hurry. Hopefully that's not going to be the case with Romano or Eric Swanson, but I'm with you. Chad Green has been a very good pitcher for a very long time. So if he's even in a setup role, I think he could be useful.
Yeah. Let's touch on just a couple more pitchers from the comments before we move on to the hitters. Shelby Miller, nice in a deep league. Not the top closing option in Detroit. That's Jason Foley, but Jason Foley isn't really a true closer. AJ Hinch apologized to us fantasy people about that. So we've heard it straight from the manager that he's not managing with fantasy in mind. So Shelby Miller could get the occasional save. You want him on your roster in a deep league?
Yeah, the most insincere apology ever from AJ Hinch. Shelby Miller's, he figured something out with the Dodgers, as pitchers often do last year. Put up some really good numbers, and he's been great so far this year. So it would not shock me if he winds up getting some saves there. As you mentioned, that bullpen is, while Jason Foley certainly looks at the top of the heap right now, it's very much unsettled. So I'm good with throwing a buck on Shelby Miller.
Another comment here pushing for Matt Waldron. I agree with the awesome AF because he throws a knuckleball. Do we want him on our fantasy teams? I did go add him in Tout Wars NL only, but that's a 12-team NL only league where if you're starting, I'm at least somewhat interested. You saw him face your Cardinals, right? Did you get any embarrassing knuckleball swing and misses?
Not as embarrassing as Graham Pauly on the Tyler Rogers swing and miss.
Hit him in the face, didn't it? Or shoulder or something?
It did. Yeah, that was shoulder, and then, the face.
Wow.
Saw someone comment that at least he knows that he's got his most embarrassing swing of his career out of the way now. So now he can
Keep going. Hopefully.
Yeah. But as far as Matt Waldron goes, not terribly interested. I'm rooting for it because I would love to see a knuckleballer have a regular rotation spot, but we're talking about I think he's like 28, 29 year old guy who had a 7.30 ERA at AAA last year. Granted, it is at El Paso. It's basically you're pitching on the moon, essentially. But to keep it with a grain of salt, but I'm not terribly interested in Matt Waldron.
And then one final name, Cody Bradford, couple good starts, really was excellent against Houston just yesterday. 7 2/3 innings, only 4 strikeouts, but just 1 earned run on 2 hits. But not sure he's going to start for very long once Michael Lorenzen comes back. Can we take a chance on him anyway?
I'm fine taking a low bid on him right now. I mean, he's probably better than Michael Lorenzen anyway. I don't know that the upside with Cody Bradford is terribly high, but I still think he's probably more interesting than Lorenzen. But they're almost surely still going to give Lorenzen that starting job once he is ready, and that shouldn't be long. So, if you want to throw a buck Cody Bradford's way, he surely earned at least one more start. But I wouldn't be super optimistic that he's going to have that rotation spot over the long haul.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. So it'd have to be a pretty deep league where you could keep him on your bench once he goes back to the rotation for me to be particularly interested. We are going to move on to our budget hitters after this quick read from Home Run Forecast. Can certain weather conditions lead to more home runs? The atmosphere can affect how far a ball flies by 20%. Home Run Forecast measures the weather conditions at a ballpark to tell us if the atmosphere is good or bad for ball flight during a game. An index value that rates the air is created for each game and ballpark and is displayed on a scale from 1 to 10. Home Run Forecast's premium site offers index values by the hour for each game, 24-hour forecasts, wind direction and speed, and even whether the roof will be open at certain stadiums. Home Run Forecast is offering a special for the start of the baseball season. You can get access to the premium site for the entire season for only $28, a savings of nearly 30%. Go to homerunforecast.com/rotowire now to sign up. Back here with Ryan Boyer, wrapping up our weekly Fab preview. We've gotten to the budget hitters, and I'm going to start with Connor Joe, who led off, was it 5 games in a row for the Pirates to start the season, but only because the team faced 5 lefties in a row.
Yeah,
it looked like he might just be on the short side of a platoon, but he hit well enough early that he is starting, not all the time, but sometimes against righties, batting much lower in the order. But if he's somebody who's more than a short side platoon guy, and if he occasionally gets a prime lineup spot, maybe we can be interested a little bit. Problem is, Connor Joe has never really shown a lot for his career. He's an exactly league average hitter. So we're talking about a 31-year-old league average hitter who is seeing an increasing role, but not yet an everyday one at all. I don't think I'd go more than a buck or two here. Although if I had a short-term need, maybe I'd go up to 3 or something. I think he might be useful for a little bit, but I don't think this is the start of an age 31 breakout season for Connor Joe.
Yeah, probably not. I really liked Connor Joe during a period of time when he was at the Rockies. I thought there was some potential there with the, given the favorable hitting environment. But now he's probably, I suspect he's eventually going to fall back into that short-term platoon. But, you know, a deep league, multi-position eligibility could be a handy guy to have around. Speaking of multi-position eligibility, Tyler Freeman, I believe in most sites, probably only third base eligible now. But if you're playing on Yahoo, which a lot of people do, I think he also has second base, shortstop, and outfield eligibility. And if he doesn't have outfield eligibility on your site, he should get that soon because he's the everyday center fielder, it looks like, for the Guardians. Somewhat surprisingly, at least to me, given that he had literally never played center field in pro ball until spring training, and now is all of a sudden the everyday center fielder. He's got a home run. He's got a stolen base in the early going. Former top 100 prospect, still just 24 years of age. The power, very limited, but he's always had good contact skills. He's got some speed, multi-position eligibility. As I mentioned, he's still a young guy and a former top prospect. Hasn't really gotten an everyday chance until now. I'm not terribly optimistic that it's going to lead to much, but he's the kind of guy that you could throw a buck or two on in a deep league, and it has the potential to pay some dividends.
Yeah, is he a post-hype sleeper, or was there never quite enough hype Maybe. With Freeman? Because he was very highly rated, especially as a real-life prospect, not the most fantasy-friendly skill set necessarily, more one of those all-around guys who does just enough of everything and mostly makes contact. Yep. But he might be. He's still not old at all, at age 25 season this year. So I like Tyler Freeman a lot. I like him more than the infielder that I've got down here, Blaze Alexander. Someone in your league is going to add him for the name. You know who it is. You're not going to outbid that guy. Just let him have Blaze Alexander, I think. Alexander, not a top prospect, more of a utility type prospect, getting some playing time against lefties with Arizona. And he's on here because he might get more playing time if Geraldo Perdomo turns out to need a trip to the injured list. He's dealing with a knee injury and is undergoing an MRI today. I don't think we have the results of that as of recording. So if Perdomo's out, Blaze Alexander could play more. If he's playing more for a decent lineup in Arizona, you can throw a buck on him if you need a shortstop. But I'm not seeing anything in his prospect reports or his minor league numbers that says this guy is about to dominate big league pitching.
I'm going to throw a little love towards Ivan Herrera of the Cardinals. Wilson Contreras's situation a little up in the air right now. Got hit by a pitch Wednesday, I believe. Actually didn't leave that game. X-rays did come back negative, and he was going to return to the lineup today, but then got scratched. He had been set to return in the DH spot because I believe it's his left hand and catching, wearing the catcher's mitt and receiving the ball, I think is causing the most pain right now. So that situation a little up in the air. And Ivan Herrera, a very nice prospect, hit his first home run Thursday. Going into today, already had four barrels early on in the season. That's a very nice number. And I think he drove in a couple more runs today as well in the Cardinals win. Last year at AAA Memphis, a 951 OPS, almost as many walks as strikeouts, 75 walks, 77 strikeouts at AAA Memphis, had a 61.5% hard hit rate in a limited sample in the majors last year. He's a legitimate prospect. I don't know how much he's ultimately going to play. It depends on how much, you know, the injury is going to keep Contreras out, if at all, and also how much they want to use him in the DH spot. It's going to get a little crowded once they get some of their outfielders back, and Brendan Donovan's going to have to play more in the infield. Then you figure Nolan Gorman's going to have to suck up a lot of those DH at-bats. But Ivan Herrera, I think, in a deeper league is a pretty solid option as a number two catcher. And with the potential, if Contreras does have to miss time, he could be paying a good amount of dividends.
Yeah, I like Ivan Herrera a lot in drafts where I was stuck waiting for my second catcher. He was one who I had as a target if I had to go very late in drafts. And I am intrigued by any sign that he's going to start playing more, so definitely would like him there. I will go with Jared Walsh as the next name on the list here. Jared Walsh, of course, had that breakout in the short 2020 season with the Angels a few years ago, where he looked legitimately excellent, a 150 WRC plus that season, and with the underlying numbers pretty much to match it. It's just it only was in 32 games because he didn't even play the whole of that short 2022 or short 2020 season. He was still pretty good the next year too, a 126 WRC plus, but then he's had some injuries, including thoracic outlet syndrome. And that's a career killer. There aren't many guys who have come back from thoracic outlet syndrome. If I see that, I'm more worried than I am for something like Tommy John for a pitcher. It's just not one that you see many guys come back from and get back to the same level. So I'm remaining fairly pessimistic for Walsh, but he's now with Texas and he's got playing time at first base. He's starting against righties in the absence of Nathaniel Lowe. Now Lowe did participate in batting practice, but Walsh should get the job for, you know, another week or two. And if he hits well enough, he could get some DH at bats. He could stick around on the roster potentially after Lau comes back. So I like Walsh, but wouldn't justify throwing much more than like 2% here. But if you do need a first baseman for the short term, he's playing and he's been good before.
Yeah, younger guy, Oliver Dunn, I think is pretty interesting. Getting a good amount of playing time for the Brewers. Seemed like he got like the last roster spot prior to opening day, but they've thrown him in the lineup fairly often. Off to a nice little start. Also had a nice year at – they got him in kind of a very nondescript trade. I think maybe it was just like cash considerations over the offseason from the Phillies. And he had a really nice season last year in the minors at AAA. I think he had like 21 home runs and almost that many stolen bases. Also had a really great – Arizona Fall League, hasn't really been much of a prospect, but solid defender. He's getting some reps at third base. You know, with the injury to Garrett Mitchell keeping him out a while, it sounds like Sal Frelick is going to be a full-time outfielder, not going to be dabbling at third base as they wanted him to. So Oliver Dunn going to get some run, got a little bit of speed, got a little bit of pop and favorable home park. I think he's worthy of $2 or $3 in a deep league.
Yeah, potentially he's playing. So I think it might make some sense. He was someone I wasn't even sure that I had heard of when I first saw his name in the lineup, although I realized that I did remember him. He was drafted by the Phillies in the minor league Rule 5 draft prior to last year and did look very good, but as a 25-year-old at AA, and the Phillies never decided to take him to the major league roster. So I kind of forgot all about him. But Bruce didn't. Maybe there's something here. He did. Again, he really performed in the minors. He just was old for his level, and nobody really cared about it. So maybe worth a shot while he's playing. JJ Bleday is my final hitter here, otherwise just known as the guy who is sending Esteri Ruiz to the minors. Basically, partially him, partially Lawrence Butler, I guess. But so far, Bleday is playing like he deserves to be here. Quite strong performances in his first eight games. Hit 300 through his first eight games. Crucially, cut his strikeout rate down to 15%. That strikeout rate as a rookie was in the high 20s. Then he cut it down to the mid 20s. So if this is real progress he's making as he heads into his age 26 season, he's a player who was supposed to be a power over hit as a prospect. We would have liked to have seen more power by now. 16 homers in 155 career games, only hitting 190. So up to this point in his career, there's been very little, but Oakland clearly has him as a part of their plans, whatever their plans are this season. They involve JJ Bleday playing a lot. And if he's making contact and playing a lot, I want him on my team. I'd go 2 to 3% in a deeper league if I need an outfielder. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine in a deeper league. He's you know, former, number four overall pick, but he's never really performed that way. The numbers in the minors just never were really very good, but he's not old at this point. Perhaps he's figured something out. He's obviously not in the best situation in terms of ballpark or supporting cast, but on a positive, that means he does not face many stumbling blocks as far as playing time goes. So if he's going to hit a little, he's going to continue to play. And it seems like they like his glove the most by far in center field. So just by virtue of the fact that there's a little bit of upside potentially there and he's going to get at bats, sure, throw a couple of bucks JJ Bleday's way.
One last scan for any interesting names in the comments here. Heston Kjerstad, would you be stashing him? He had, 10 RBI in the minors the other day. Is he going to come up soon enough that you go get him where you can stash?
I'm fine with the stash. How committed are the Orioles to Austin Hayes? He's off to a slow start, and he's kind of just been solid-ish, I would say. Probably not someone who should be holding back some of their more higher ceiling prospects like Kjerstad. But that being said, I don't know that the Orioles want to make that sort of move yet. That's the thing with these Orioles prospects face is the avenues to playing time just aren't necessarily there. So an injury or two, and Kjerstad definitely has interesting power for sure, and bats from the left side, so he wouldn't be thwarted by the massive left field wall at Camden Yards. So in a deeper league stash, I'm definitely good with that.
All right, and one final name from the comments here: a couple of people asking about Michael A. Taylor, asking if this is Renaissance is real. Well, to that part of the question, I would say I wouldn't be. There's hardly anybody I'd be picking up on the hitter side based on their numbers through a week. I would not sort by OPS and go grab the top guys. That's just not how I'd be looking about to add guys. It's just not, you just can't do enough for performance reasons in eight games to really move the needle. But Michael A. Taylor is a completely fine player. 21 homers and 13 steals last year in 388 plate appearances. If he's playing a lot in Pittsburgh, you had him in a deep league for that reason, even if he had a 500 OPS so far. In fact, he has a 973, which is nice, gives you more confidence doing it. But I don't hate Michael A. Taylor, and the performance certainly helps.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I mean, the consistency is not going to be there at all. But if you look up at the end of the year and he does get those at-bats, and I see no reason why he wouldn't, I mean, he's got 2020-ish potential. It's going to come with a bad average and terrible plate discipline, but in a deep league, that's a perfectly valuable player.
All right, that's going to do it for today's Fab show. We hope we cover every single player anybody is thinking of picking up in any league. And we also hope that no UCLs snapped in the last hour. If they did, we didn't cover those. But, hey, maybe I'll cover them tomorrow. I'll be back with Marty Tallman talking about some surprise teams. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for hanging out in the comments. And Ryan and I will be back next week.